Previously on Those Were the Days.
We have grown as a society.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot, Audie.
This sound and this image do not go together.
I think he was born with old man face.
Yeah. I'm going to bring him like the first New England fact for a hot second here.
But before we get into it.
Locked in a hotel room, sitting on Kleenex, sucking applesauce through a straw.
It's not good weather, but it's very damp.
The 90s loved just fat shaming everyone.
So I horrified my elementary school teachers informing them what a Nantucket sleigh ride was.
Those Were the Days is filmed before a live internet audience.
Everybody, welcome to Those Were the Days. You know, sometimes you want to go where everyone knows your name, where they're always glad you came. Well, you came to the right place because I know all these people's names. And yes, dear listener, I know yours. Inside this unassuming and very brown bar, you'll find me tending the bar and interacting with my favorite patrons. He's full of facts, trivia, and good stories. It's Audie Norman.
You know, little known fact. You could be sweating when you're anxious in order to alert others. See, there's a scientific theory that suggests that we've evolved to sweat while we're anxious in order to alert the brain of other people around us so that they are primed for whatever it is that's making us anxious. In fact, brain scans have revealed that when you sniff the sweat of a panic-induced person, regions of the brain that handle emotional and social signals light up. When you're anxious, your sympathetic nervous system releases hormones, including adrenaline, which activates your sweat glands. Gives a whole new meaning to sweating to the oldies.
Thank you so much, Audie. You might get the belt. The only true Northeasterner here who can probably do these accents justice, Amy Frost.
There were a lot of television shows from my youth that gave me really, like, high expectations for the way that things were going to be, but none let me down more as Cheers' portrayal of the local bar.
And he's here every night, but definitely not a drunk. It's Travis.
Well, sorry. I fell asleep there for a second. One more beer, just a quick one, and then I'll hit the road.
If you haven't guessed by now, we're covering the legendary CBS sitcom Cheers. Pull up a stool and let me pour you a pint. Also, I would like to point out that I did not plan nor set up who I was going to pick as what character. That just worked.
It just works.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know what happened. We did not plan that. That was good. That was good. Well done, everybody.
The beauty of how well we podcast together.
Mm-hmm. Look, you know, we're basically a hive mind. Just comes together to talk about classic TV, which is what we're going to do here. And we are very excited to have you, the listener, the viewer, joining us here on the show tonight because we're talking about a legendary sitcom. Like, there are sitcoms that just, they transcend the rest of them. They become a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Cheers definitely meets that bar. But why does it meet the bar? We're going to talk about it. We're going to find out. We're going to dig into Cheers and understand what made it so special. But first, as always, I would love to get a little bit of history around you guys and Cheers and what made it special to you, if it was at all. Audie, let's start with you.
You know, Cheers is one of those where it's like, I don't remember trying to watch it, but I remember just watching it somehow. I think it's one of those shows that was on TBS all the freaking time in reruns in some way, shape, or form. And I mean, it's one of those, it's like, how do you not know this show if you're of a certain age? You know, like, I know today in streaming and everything, we've gotten away from TV like it was, but man, it just feels like Cheers was always there. And that theme song, good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember in band class in middle school, one of the kids played like the Cheers theme on the last day of school. And it was like very emotional. It was like a lot.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That song could be played at a birthday, a wedding, or a funeral and fit like everywhere you play it.
Very heavily if you've watched Adventure Time. Or the spin-off show Fiona and Cake. which are both excellent and really wild. Like, there's some depth in those cartoons that you do not expect to happen. And the song features heavily for a character who kind of loses himself a lot of the time when he puts on his magic crown and gets powers, and the song brings him back. It's so good. It's so good. You're like, what is happening? Is this the cheer? Like, the first time it happens, you're like, is that the Cheers theme song? Oh, it is.
Yeah, because it's what you need. Look, I think it could calm the Hulk down. I think that's the kind of song that it is. Yeah. So, Amy, since you got the mic, let's keep going with you. Find out what your relationship to Cheers is, as being someone who's in closer proximity.
Real
to
close.
The inspiration.
So I used to live a block away from Cheers.
No way.
Yeah, it's actually the Bull and Finch Pub on Beacon Street. And I did, when I went to college in Boston for 2 years as a theater major, and I used to walk by it every day to go to class. It's like on a corner, and I lived a block away, and my, like, down the little street was where my classes were. So I used to go by. So there are a lot of tourists from, like, 99 and 2000 who have photos of themselves and a group of raggedy theater kids, because we used to photobomb all the time.
Of course.
This was film,
right?
Like, you were not looking at these pictures as you went, so you got pictures back with just raggedy theater kids in the background. But I love Cheers a lot. And watching this episode, I was like, there's so many things that I feel like a lot of people need explained. There are a lot of Boston sports references, and it's wild.
There were quite a few, yeah.
I forgot how good Coach is, though. Oh, I did forget.
Coach is a treasure.
Treasure. So, I mean, this is near and dear to my heart. I did literally live there.
That's awesome. I have been down the stairs, but I did not get to eat nor have a beverage there because it was packed.
Yeah.
When I went, because I was in a bar crawl when I went.
Mm,
and so, you know, we didn't get to actually drink at a bar till like the 75th bar we walked to, because it just fills up as you go,
but
and you're like,
the good news is we've got plenty.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of bars. I think we went off the beaten path and had a great time.
Yeah.
It was quiet. it's unusual. Whereas everywhere else was just nuts. But tons of fun. So, Travis, moving on to you. Cheers.
Yeah, I remember watching the hell out of Cheers. I know I watched it, like, in its time slot and then a lot of reruns. And because there were so many characters in the show that would come and go, you can kind of forget where they started, where they ended. Like, the episode started and I thought, wait, is Cliff in the first episode? And then he shows up, but he's on the other end of the bar. Like, he's not sitting next to Norm.
The wrong end. Yeah.
Like,
well, cause Frasier and Lilith aren't there.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But like, yeah, I love Coach. Coach is great.
Coach is so good.
They made this particular episode too, the pilot episode, they're talking about Sam's pitching career. A lot when he's pitching for the Boston Red Sox. And what I loved is, as a Detroit Tigers fan, the names they mentioned were Detroit Tigers players. When they said, oh, he struck out, you know, Cash, Kaline, and Freehan with a runner at second base, that's Norm Cash, Al Kaline, and Bill Freehan. They were prominent Tigers players back in the late 60s, early 70s, which, if you do the math, if Sam Malone is supposed to be the same age that if he's supposed to be the age of the actor, that fits, because he would have been about 21, 22 when the Tigers were good, when those players were playing for him. So, like, somebody actually paid attention when they were writing this, which I appreciate.
Oh, yeah. No one was writing this show in their sleep, and we will get to that. Yeah. Like, it's pretty astonishing once we start pulling through the episode. But a little bit about Cheers the show, if you were, you know, born under a rock or, you know, after the year 2000. We've got some facts for you. I don't know, I'm picking on you, 2000ers. But, maybe 2010. I don't know who's listening to this show. We all are old. It's fine. The song was written by Gary Portnoy. Mm-hmm. This was his debut single.
Yeah.
Gary Portnoy. You might not recognize his name because I think this is all he did. But this is what he did, and boy, like, is it a banger.
Right. You got to be known for one thing.
He's got two more specific credits. He did the theme for Punky Brewster. He sang that one. And he did the theme for Mr. Belvedere.
Okay. Oh, so Gary's got chops. Well done, Gary Portnoy. I hope you can just ride those royalty checks to retirement.
Yeah.
Which you're probably retired now. Because, again, we're all old. This show is for old people.
Oh, good. I need to outline.
Yeah, right. So this show it was a treasure. I didn't write down when it came out or who wrote it. Remind me, James Burroughs, Les Charles and Bill Charles. What was the other Charles?
Hang on. James Burroughs, one. Glenn Charles.
Glenn
and Les Charles.
Yep.
Yep. Who you might be familiar with their work from a little show we talked about last week called Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is all in the same universe. Which I found out thanks to you guys in the Wings episode from last week, where we're just really across the bay there in Boston proper. Mm-hmm. But little thing is about this show, the series finished dead last when it debuted that week. Dead last, 77th, no one watched it. Which is a travesty, because this show is just joke a minute.
I mean, for a pilot, this was real good.
Yeah, it was.
We've watched some stinker pilots of good shows, but this was a good pilot.
It's a very
they
good
knew
pilot.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
This was killer.
For it to finish dead last the week of its debut, and the show ran from 1982 to 1993, and they made 270 episodes. So who's getting the last laugh there?
Right. Yeah.
Well, apparently it debuted against the 2-hour season premiere of Magnum PI that year.
Well,
so
that doesn't help.
No.
Yeah, but 77th? Like,
because
it's gotta
you
be.
Never, like, cause this is the thing, though. Well, yeah, no, 77th is ridiculous, right? But this is back in the day where if you did not catch it, and you did not have. I mean, I think this is probably even. 82 is probably even before you had the fancy.
It's pre VCR.
And certainly before you had the one where you could watch one thing and then record another thing.
Yeah. Right.
Because that was that's when you were living.
Yeah.
It was a time.
Yeah, you run your VCR one channel and then you flip to your TV to another one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the magic. That was the hacker level stuff back in the
no
day.
No one change anything.
Yeah, don't touch it. Yeah. I've configured it just how I want it. Got my RF modulator plugged in. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, if you could understand that and get it to work, you were a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were the king of your neighborhood,
you were.
Or at least among your dad's friends. My boy can fix that VCR to do whatever we want. You know, have him come over. So the bar. Let's talk a little bit about the bar. The bar is probably one of the reasons this show could run so long. Because it was everything was pretty self-contained in this bar. Like every episode. Didn't need a whole lot extra other than shots of the outside. And the bar was real. It was a functioning, serviceable bar that was used for CBS parties from time to time. They would go down to the Cheers set to drink. So it
That's
was a
great.
Functioning bar.
I love that.
Which I thought was pretty flippin' amazing. Initially, they would get complaints about this show, which you're like, what would they complain about? All the drinking? Yeah, the drinking's bad. No! Complaints would roll in about the show's laugh track being too loud. The only thing about that is there was no laugh track. The audience was literally laughing that loud at every joke.
Well, and that was one of the fun little bits of trivia from this particular episode that I loved as I was reading through about it was... When Norm has his first entrance and he comes in and Sam asks him, hey, what do you know? And he's like, not enough. And everyone just dies laughing. And the writers were like, that was great because they loved it and we weren't expecting that. And it was terrible because they loved it and we weren't expecting it. And now it makes writing his entrances that much harder.
Oh, yeah.
Because now they've got
270 Norm entrances or however many episodes you said.
Yeah.
Because they did one for every single episode of the show. If Norm walked in the door, they needed a call and response.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I could not imagine having to do that. There's only so many jokes, but they're out there. There's 270 of them. You can watch and find every one and catalog them. It'll be that. Maybe I'll do that over the weekend. It'll be great fun. We had a handful of characters that were on this show and that premiered in this episode. Cliff is one of my favorites because Cliff and I are kindred spirits a little bit. We both love crazy trivia and just want to be on Jeopardy. That seems like a seems like a match made in heaven. Cliff is great. I didn't expect him on this episode, funny enough, and I was getting nervous until he showed up towards like the middle, but like you said, at the wrong end of the bar. He's not next to Norm. Mm-hmm. Norm's the resident everyday bar drinking guy, always shows up. There's a coach is our bartender for the first three seasons. I think season four, yeah. Woody comes in. Mm-hmm. Which, not in this episode, but fun fact about Woody, I guess they wrote the character prior to Woody Harrelson auditioning and named him prior to Woody Harrelson auditioning. Perfect. So when Woody auditioned, his name just happened to be the character. Perfect. It wasn't, they didn't retrofit that. Mm-hmm. It just happened. And Woody didn't even want to audition, but his friend told him he should. Woody wanted to be in movies. But then it just worked out.
Good news, Woody. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
this
can
is how
both.
You do it. People
you've done
have
good.
To know
yeah.
who you are.
You've done good.
Yeah, exactly. We got Diane, played by Shelley Long. We got Carla as Rhea Perlman, played Carla, who's just
she's
awesome.
So good in this. Oh,
oh she's
love
fantastic.
Her. So
her entrance.
I love her in anything.
I love her in anything, but her entrance in this episode is just magic.
Well, it's yeah. funny because we talked about Wings last week and how we felt it was like almost overproduced. In a way, mm-hmm. like overwritten, yeah. this feels like they baked it at just the right amount of time yeah. for every single person and every
She's
single
also
character.
Just the most Boston. Like, that is just it, isn't it? All right, well,
but, I mean,
okay.
Talk about getting your characters like right at the jump because she comes in,
yeah.
mm-hmm. she says all that, and then it cuts to Ted Danson and Sam as just like, God, what? Do you think I was too hard on her? Like, yeah. it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yep. Yeah, it's so great. And Ted Danson, of course, playing Sam Malone, the owner of the bar, who just oozes cool, man. Like, just mm-hmm. oozes cool. I don't know how they could have cast any different. The guy, his timing is spot on. The way he carries himself is spot on. The dry wit is astonishing. He's a treasure.
Like,
here's
what
treasure.
I love about Sam, too, right? Because we get, like, a lot of womanizer characters in old TV. But Sam mm-hmm. falls flat on his face so many times yes. because of it. It's real good. Like, we're yeah. never supposed to believe that this is, like, great. Like, yeah. like, no, yeah. look at him. He's a mess.
He's a disaster. Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. And we didn't get Frasier in this episode. He comes along later. I never even made it to watching the Kirstie Alley episodes. I didn't see those. I watched up until Diane left, and then I didn't lose interest. I think something happened, and then I lost my groove where yeah, I was binging these episodes. So I never saw those, but there's still a handful of great characters. Carla's husband. Mm-hmm. Shows up yeah. later as oh, a yeah. recurring character, and I don't remember the dude's name.
It is,
but he's, I figured you would know.
Oh,
his character's
Dan
name
Hedaya.
Is Nick.
Dan Hedaya is the actor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, Dan Hedaya, while Nick Tortelli is a great character, and yeah. so many people know him as that, I know him mm-hmm. from a movie called Running Scared. He played the captain in that. And that movie, because it's so seared into my brain, that's the only thing I can think of him as first. And then it's every other role after that. But his work as Nick Tortelli is so good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was good enough they tried to do a spinoff called The Tortellis.
Yeah.
That didn't last.
Yeah.
But
I don't think I could watch The Tortellis. Like, I feel like Nick's not a redeemable enough character for
And that,
that
was part of it, I think.
So for me, Dan Hedaya is always the accountant for the Adams family.
Adams
yeah.
family.
That's what
I mean, that's
I
number
put
two.
Him as 100% of the time.
Yeah, that's mine. I remember seeing him on this show going, it's the guy from the Adams family.
But the thing with him in Running Scared was he was the 1980s police captain, but he wasn't the yelling, screaming, fire and brimstone type captain. And so mm-hmm. that's part of why, like, he was just very calm, like, quiet, and just matter of fact about everything, and it was so perfect.
Yeah. It's every character on the show is so well done, and for the pilot, talking about the pilot being so well baked to the perfect temperature, like cake. This show, the pilot, reminds me a lot of kind of the intro to Home Alone, which I always cite the introduction in Home Alone, like the first 20 minutes, as some of the best writing, directing, cinematography on the planet for establishing a story and all the pieces you need to know without dumping exposition on you. It's all organically happening. You learn who everybody is. You see all the Rube Goldberg madness that makes this situation possible, all with visual sight. It's a movie. Like, you don't need to be told. Just show the things, and we'll pick it up. It's just a masterpiece in that. And this show is a masterpiece at how a pilot is done.
Yeah.
Every character is introduced in a really realistic way. Every single character is given enough dialogue to talk about who they are and what they're there for and what their point is. And we're all given jokes interspersed with it. It is so well done. They should teach classes on it for people writing.
They very smartly put Diane in because, she's the new guy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, no, let me tell you. You don't understand. Let me tell you. Like, the things that you can't just, because Sam Malone does not have any, listen, the Red Sox were not good.
No, they really weren't.
They were not good. The Patriots, they were not good. No one was good. It was bad then. And so talking about it was just misery 100% of the time. Which I loved Coach. And he's like, oh, now my head hurts. And when he picks up the phone... Good grief.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. Yeah, Coach. Oh, speaking.
It's so good.
Oh, my gosh.
Coach.
I laughed so hard. So bad.
Coach is easily my favorite thing of this episode because if you are a sports fan at all, you have had conversations with this exact person who has no real opinion of their own. So any opinion that is told to them, they're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Wants to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So I got it. This is super minor, but I noticed it. It's near the beginning of the episode. I noticed it and I couldn't stop thinking about it. So at one point when the bar starts to fill up, right? When patrons start to show up, at one point they pan past a woman in a wheelchair. And I thought, that's really progressive. That's some representation. And then I thought, how did she get in the bar?
There's no ramp.
No elevator. Yeah. This was not how did she get in the bar?
She has some very, very good friends.
Yeah, yeah. She had some strong friends.
Was that the
helping her out?
That wasn't the older woman, was it?
No. Yeah. No,
she was a younger lady.
That's right. Yep.
But it was in a wheelchair. And I was like, oh, that's some cool representation. And then I was like, wait a minute. How?
Yeah, now the logic brain kicks in and you're just going to spin yourself into the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, it's the old. They're treacherous stairs. They're not just stairs.
Yeah.
They're treacherous stairs.
Well, it's the old Spielberg effect. Let's not worry there wasn't a hole there a minute ago.
Yeah,
but let's make it exciting enough that we don't care.
I got into it, and then I was like, well, now I need to rewind because I've just missed everything.
That's pretty cool. I would love to hear the story behind how that happened. You just roll on the set, say hey, and, roll back out. What's the deal? What's your story? I want to know. Maybe we can find her. Travis, get on that.
I'll work on it.
Yeah, so this pilot, I think I've got. So I've done all my trivia and all that. We can start working our way through this episode. So the iconic music just starts to play at the beginning. I'm already into it, and Sam's walking around the bar doing his thing. This is our cold open, which plays better than the Wings cold open.
Absolutely,
It knew what it wanted to be when it started, because it's we kind of have the same intro almost. Yeah. The main character strolls into a place that's key to the show and then runs into somebody who's going to foil their moment somehow, or be the joke. And this little kid rocks it when he comes in and he's just like, how about a beer? And of course, Sam says, how about some ID? Mm-hmm. Hands him over a 1944 guy's license.
Which I laughed a lot harder at than it really deserved. because I'm like, no, this is 1982. Do the math. You're okay.
Uh-huh.
It's when not the, as when, ridiculous as in my head right now.
But when the kid's mouthing the date as Sam's reading it, like, it's like, you know, he's gone over that so many times to make sure.
Oh, yeah. He has practiced this moment.
I love when he's
second only to the kids in Shaun of the Dead. Not Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Second only.
This kid pulls it off because I just love how he just goes, oh, I'm flattered. Wait till I tell the missus. He's trying so hard to sell it. How was Nom? Oh, war is gross.
That's what they say.
Yeah, gross.
War is gross.
It was so cool, and then just Sam being awesome, and then we get our intro here, our theme song, and it's all those little vintage pictures, paintings, whatever they are, of the people in the 20s and whatnot are just,
most famous people. You will never know who they really are.
They're just, you know, pictures.
I mean, the Wii One picture has been in my reaction photos folder for eternity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, I use that all the time.
It's right there. Next up, we got Diane and Sumner walk into the bar. Diane is Shelley Long, of course, who's going to be a main character. We don't know that yet. Nobody knows anything. It's a pilot. Walk into the bar, and it's this is one of those examples as they're coming in and they each say each other's names like three times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what Penny Marshall was talking about.
Yeah.
This is what throws people off. No one does that. She says Sumner like 52 times.
I think she loves his name, right? Like, because his name is a thing, right?
Yes.
She's waiting for someone to recognize the name because he's got an article in whatever it was. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
It was not a popular.
Harper's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's all about the academic creds.
Yeah. I think she was fishing for someone to notice.
Well, that definitely makes a lot of sense.
I'm glad they said it, because the first time I heard it, I was like, did she say Thunder? Was that his name? Oh, no, Sumner. Okay, I got it. I'm on board now.
Yeah.
Thunder would have been a better name. That would have been fine. Wouldn't have fit his character as well. No. Also, he's like 15 years older than her. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that is the story.
Right.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because he had an ex-wife left, and then, he's got a beautiful young new bride.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah. This is going
to
go well.
You're supposed to be icked. You're supposed to be.
Yeah, so this is where we start to get the ball rolling on Diane meeting Sam, which is going to be our relationship with the contention and the or will they, won't they situation, which is always necessary in your comedy TV / drama moments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Sumner ends up leaving her at the table, and the phone rings. And like any normal person at any normal place you've never been to, you just go ahead and answer that phone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is what Diane does anyway. Picks up the phone behind the bar, at the bar where no one is yet, because it's very empty. It must be like 4 p.m. on the money when this all starts to go down. Nobody's off work yet. They're eloping to Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And she picks up the phone. And Sam comes out, and she says, oh, this person's calling for you, and ends up being a girl Sam knows. And his reaction, with his mouth full, holding like a coffee, no. Mm-hmm. It's like, who is this? Like, give me the phone. Then immediately backs up. And it is just so good. This is why I love Ted Danson in this role. It's perfect.
And then it's the, you know, and he's like miming, like, I went out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, he had to step out. Oh, where? And he's miming getting a haircut. And she goes, mime class. And he's just like, but he's into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, fine, that'll do. Sure.
Yeah, whatever works. Whatever we need.
Sure, that'll get rid of her. Honestly, that's probably pretty good.
And she tells him that she said, you're a magnificent pagan beast. And he said, thanks, what's the message?
Which that was great.
Blew the roof off for me. I was like, all right, if you aren't sold on this show up to now, you're sold now. You're in. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how you could skip it.
Then don't bother.
Yeah, it's not going to stick. You're done. Yeah.
Yeah,
this is it. This is what it's going to be. So she's telling Sam all about Sumner's creds and where they're going, and they're going to go on, they're getting married. Because she wants the best bottle of champagne. That was right.
So the best before Sumner leave, like as Sumner's leaving though, right? And she's like, "Am I an idiot for letting you go see the woman that you used to be in love with?" And he's like, "I'm leaving you alone in a bar. Who's the stupid one?"
And Sam's answer,
too close to call.
Yes.
Yeah, that was so good.
Sam throughout it's that this... whole that whole so exchange good. Is just on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love it because he asks Sam. Like Sumner's like, "What do you think, Sam?" And he's like, "Too close to call. Close like, to ask a stupid question, you will get a stupid answer, my friend."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's no real malice or anything in it. It's just a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so great. When they quote the poetry and she looks at him and tells him that's done, he goes, "Oh, I sure hope so." So razor sharp wit on this show.
It's the wit of a bartender. It's a bartender who has heard everything. And has
and
dealt
has
with
seen the, everything, yeah.
Yeah, and just is like, whatever, I don't care, just get this over with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're done now. I gave you the wine for on the house. Like, let's be done with me being over here. Which is great. So Sumner leaves, and that's when Coach shows up. This is what I love about the way they introduce characters. Each of them gets their time. They get their couple minutes to establish who they are. And Coach just comes in being super upset about the Patriots picking a linebacker. They got first draft pick and they wasted it. And everyone he talks to after he complains about the football player tells him, "Well, I don't know. I think that could be all right." "Yeah, you're probably right. That could be all right." Just switches but it.
And then he'll say that. He'll say, "Oh, yeah, did you see the guy? They got a top-tier linebacker." And I was like, "Well, they're swimming in linebackers. They don't need an..." "Oh, no, you know what? You're right."
Yes.
Oh, my head.
Yeah.
See, that feels like what I do with sports people. Like, most of the time, I don't know. I just want to be in the room. Like, I just want to have the fun. Let's just have the fun. So Sam begins to tell Coach what Diane's story is. And she's like, "Wait a minute. Are you going to tell? You can't tell this to everybody who walks in the bar." He says, "What would you like me to tell them? I don't care. She's a hooker." which was amazing. Because now Coach thinks she's an actual hooker. Because Coach,
the glory of it
Coach
is Coach
is a simple man,
and Coach doesn't bat an eye. He's like, "Oh, okay,
no."
He's like, "Whatever." Yeah.
Coach isn't going to judge.
No, not at all.
If he can still be with Sam after everything Sam did,
yeah,
Coach is cool. So, Coach took one too many foul balls to the side of the head. I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Coach is really useful in this episode because you get both his personality and you also use him as the person to tell Sam's story. Sam doesn't have to tell his own story because Coach is like, "You don't know Sam Mayday Malone?" And that's where we get a second character telling the proxy for us, Diane, what is going on, what Sam's story is, why he's at this bar. And it clues in this conversation about Sam was a drunk who owned a bar, fell out of baseball.
He was a good drunk.
He was a good drunk.
I love, like, Coach just adores Sam, right? He was a great pitcher. Everything this kid did was great.
Yeah, that's, you got to appreciate that.
I know.
He's a good hype man. Coach.
He's always going to believe in Sam, even when Sam's not at his best.
But to your point, like the writing of this episode is so good because, like you just said, we use Coach to tell Sam's story to get that ball rolling, and then Sam gets to finish it off when Diane asks him, "Why did you stop pitching?" And he's like, "Well, I was a pitcher and I developed an elbow problem. I was bending
elbow
too much."
Problem. That was so good too. Like that, everything was just so great. But yeah, we get that kind of deal going on where he gets to finish story. Sam as a character is never going to just openly tell that, you know, what's the point?
Right.
You know, that would be against his character to be like, "Oh, I bought this bar." Like it didn't make any sense. So they did a great job making that Coach's job to do that. Then Carla gets her intro and Carla is just a fireball.
So it starts with Coach telling Sam, "Hey, Carla's late."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I mean, then immediately, like, it's not.
Yeah.
And then she walks in.
That was great.
Oh, yeah. God, it's so good.
Yeah, she just yells about she had kids vomiting all over, and she's
no
like,
one says
if you can't
a word
be compassionate,
to her when she walks in the door.
No.
Yeah, I'm late.
I'm actually shocked she didn't break the bar set when she flung that door open, because you can hear that door just smack against it. I'm like, oh, that was sturdy. She gave it everything she had.
Yeah, we didn't see the first take where she did break it, and they reinforced it after that.
they needed to fix that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she runs in talking about her kids. If you can't be compassionate, then I don't even know. I don't need this job. I'm not even going to work here. I'll quit.
Job's not even
that good. Job's not even that good. Gets back out of earshot, and Sam goes, "You think I was too hard on her?" Never said a word.
Mm-hmm.
This is 4:05 p.m. Most likely, she's not that late. It's okay, right. You know.
There's nothing. It's not, you know.
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. So Carly gets in. Phone ring. I just want to highlight this joke because, like you said, I think you talked about it, Amy. When the phone rings and Coach picks it up and yells,
"Oh my
is there
gosh.
An Ernie Pantuso here? That's you, Coach, speaking."
Yeah. That killed me. Oh my God.
So good.
I died. I was on the floor.
Because best part is no one is surprised he doesn't know. No one is upset that he doesn't know. It's just very, that's you, Coach.
Maybe. It also got me because I, you know, having not watched it in a while, I forgot that was his actual name. I'm used to him just being Coach, so.
Coach, yeah.
Right.
It's like, he said the name, I was like, that sounds familiar, and then, you know, Sam says, that's you, Coach. I was like, oh, right,
Speaking.
So funny. I know so many coaches that have not coached in a long time that people just continue to call Coach. Like,
it's the nickname Seinfeld that will episode stick. With the maestro. Like, it's just, you get the title and then.
No,
that's
honestly,
it. That's
once
all
you become,
you got.
If you become a coach and you do it for any length of time, that will be. I still run into my high school track coach, and if I see him, it's Coach Lober. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He retired like 10 years ago. Or 15 years ago or something like that. You know, he had been coaching, but he coached for like 45 years. So, you know, it was generations of people that he was a coach for. So it's just always coach.
Yeah. And in a small town environment, even big town, you small area, you're the coach. The guy, because you, like you said, it's generational. You teach and teach and teach.
Yeah.
Over and over and over for 20, 25 years. You're gonna have a network, you know, people are going to know you as coach. Pretty great. So I think I skipped over some stuff, but I really got to the meat of this episode, which is the age-old question of what is the sweatiest movie ever made?
Oh, my God.
Which is the conversation going on.
So here's the best part, because the best part about that is Carla has gone over to get the drink order.
Uh-huh.
And Carla tells the rest of the bar the conversation that they're having to decide what the sweatiest movie is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you mean? Like the movie where people sweat the most, and now the whole bar is in it. Which this bit has the best payoff.
Yes.
Oh, it absolutely
so
does.
Good. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of good answers to this question.
There are. I was going to ask you guys so the popular Cliff says body heat. We've got Alien. Norm throws out
buckets.
Alien.
Ben-Hur.
Yeah, Alien buckets.
Alien is pretty sweaty.
It is.
Yeah. So I think I know Fast and the Furious 1, to me, is the sweatiest movie I've ever been a part of.
Oh,
everyone was sweaty. Everyone was glistening. Yeah. Everyone was wet. It bothered every bone in my body watching that.
I mean, that is in the running for it, certainly. I mean, Alien is up there, right? Because it's just like everybody.
Yeah.
It's just humid in that ship for some reason.
A lot of water in the air.
I mean, Ben-Hur is a great choice.
There was a lot of sweat going on back then.
And that was all. That's like from an era where it was natural sweating. That wasn't like somebody was running around with the bottle of glycerin spritzing people down.
Actual sweat.
I was going to say Magic Mike, but that's not sweaty. It's just shiny. That's
right, that's baby oil.
That's totally different oil.
I was, you know, not movies I've seen necessarily, but I thought of any kind of high school movie, like Oh, what's smelly the one movies. Where they're in they're playing football? James Vanderbeek. What's that one?
Varsity Blues.
Varsity Blues, something like that.
That's a sweaty
also,
movie.
Top Gun came to mind. I was thinking about that one.
Yeah, Top Gun is real sweaty.
Mm-hmm. And it is sweat. Because it's a lot of, you know, it's beach volleyball, and then the rest of it is just in the cockpits of fighters where there's nowhere to go. But you're it's going to get hot in there.
Yeah.
You know what movie had some sweat that bothered me a lot more than Fast and Furious? Teen Wolf. Remember the end of Teen Wolf? When they are just, I mean, drenched. And then they, like, grab each other and, like, pick each other up. And I'm like, they're going to slide off each other. This is the most disgusting basketball game I've ever seen.
I mean, if you want
to definitely pull a Scott Johnson level of grossed out.
Dirty Dancing has moments of sweat.
Yeah,
right. Sure.
Because that's the thing.
There's sexy sweat and there's non-sexy sweat, though. Yeah. And, like, the end of Teen Wolf is definitely opposite of sexy sweat.
But, like, there's scenes in movies that could be that, right? Like, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, the scene with the rhino is incredibly sweaty. But that's just one scene in that movie. It's not like Top Gun, which has it all the way through.
All sweat all the time. Yeah.
Well, and then that leads us into Cliff's first little known fact of Cheers.
Right. And what is his little known fact?
Just, you know.
Audie, were you going to cueing that up for yourself? What was that fact?
Women have less sweat glands than men do, but they sweat more. It's just like, okay.
They're larger and more active.
And then he turns to Diane is like, so what are your sweat patterns?
Perspiration patterns.
Because that's the other part about Cliff, right? Cliff, incorrect facts and inappropriate questions.
Yep.
Yeah. And a little known fact about Cliff's little known facts, they were ad-libbed. John Ratzenberger ad-libbed those little known facts. The writers would simply write the script and give him a cue like, this is where you're going to need a fact to follow up a line.
He's the inspiration for that character. He actually auditioned for George. Norm.
George Went, a.k.a. Norm.
Right. Yeah. He auditioned for Norm, didn't get it, and told the writers, y'all should have a know-it-all kind of character. They're like, okie dokie.
Yeah.
Just wrote it in.
Perfect. Look, you make your own trail when you get turned away.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I'll just make
Twitter.
A new one.
Oh, Lord.
Absolutely. And you know, we've still got John Ratzenberger in our life. I think he's been in every Pixar movie ever made.
He has.
He's always a voice of something. Mm-hmm. So listen up. Anytime you have a Pixar movie, you've got a John Ratzenberger in there.
With a little cliff
I don't know
in
why.
There.
Yeah.
Why not?
But he'll be there. So Sumner comes back in the bar at this point.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been gone a while. An hour, I think, is what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's been missing. Shouldn't have taken that long. He said, I'll be 10 minutes. He's been gone to his ex-wife's apartment. He's having some second thoughts now all of a sudden. That woman is just great.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes in. She's like, where have you been? They're having a conversation about the sweatiest movie. And he just goes, Cool Hand Luke. And
everybody's like, oh, yeah.
I forgot that.
That was
good.
The response my gosh. She was looking for.
No, it wasn't, but it was the perfect response.
It was
that
beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It was good. Now I want to watch Cool Hand Luke. I've never seen that movie, but now that I know it's one of the sweatiest movies in the world, I guess I have to watch it. So he kind of wants to sit Diane down and be like, look, I've fallen back in love with my ex-wife, but she manages to talk him out of it. She's like, no. We're going to go. We're going to get on the plane.
Great.
We're married.
We can talk about it in Barbados.
Yeah, we can talk about it when we're there. Yeah, and it's just getting worse. So he's like, you're right. We're going to leave. Phone call comes in the bar. Carla picks it up. Is there a Sumner Sloan?
Is your name...
Oh, wait,
hang on. I'm sorry if I get this wrong, but is your name Sumner Sloan? Yes.
She just laughs. It's great.
And it which reinforces the fact that Diane is ridiculous because she's all like, everyone needs to know his name, right? It's Sumner Sloan. This is my guy. This is the academic. And Carla can't get over how silly that name sounds.
Yeah.
Which is really good callback to taking the wind out of Diane's sails or helping her realize that this guy's a toolbag, one or the other, which is pretty great. So he's going to go back and get the ring because his ex-wife said she could have it. Like, isn't that bad luck to wear the wedding ring of a previous? I wouldn't.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, like, I don't think somebody came up to me and be like, hey, you can marry me and here's my husband's ring. I'd be like, I don't want that one. That's like, I don't think that's.
I feel like every other, like, there's a zillion other sitcoms where somebody goes to, like, reuse a ring and everyone is like,
it's got bad juju on it. Like, don't do that. That's not okay. Yeah. Like,
it's it works if it's like a generational thing and you're passing it down
in
the family.
It was his grandmother's.
Sure. But he gave it to his ex-wife, right?
She kept, like,
it's lucky she didn't pawn it like that. You know, that's also a move you could do. There are many options when you have a big old honking piece of jewelry from someone you don't like anymore. It's a gift. It's mine now. I don't have to give it back. It's a life rule. Don't ask about gifts after you give them. It's bad. It's a bad move for you and for them. So he leaves the bar. Now we just got Diane left at the bar, and very few people are in it. Mm-hmm. It's got to be late night at this point.
Is it late night, like, did we open the bar at, like, 2? Mm-hmm. We've come in for the after work crowd. Now it's, like, 7, so we're going to go home and have dinner.
Right.
Yeah, because more maybe. People do come in.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but Sam looks at his watch when they do, and Coach has already left.
Yeah, that's true.
When the bigger crowd comes in, he's already like, it's late, is what I'm thinking. Because Coach is out. Norm is toast.
Yeah.
Norm's getting driven home.
And Norm is not a lightweight.
Yeah. No. Norm's done. Which brings me to the point that no one on the show Cheers ever left the bar drunk on their own. If they were drunk, someone took them home, or they made sure to announce that some cab was picking them up. There was always, and it actually got accolades from people against drunk driving because of that constant message of them getting rides.
The T-stop is, which is the subway there, is like 2 blocks away. Like, it's right there. Like, you can, no problem.
But not everybody knows that. So you gotta tell them. You know.
They did a great job. That was awesome. Yeah.
We won't go into the subject of Norm's bar tab, though, over the course of the show.
Oh, no.
Although it is a joke that gets made a few times.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't have to worry about that.
But I love before Coach takes him home. But before that, Coach talking about how he's been going on with this book for 6 years. And Diane's like, oh, you're writing a novel? And he's like, reading one.
Oh, man. Just the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good for you, Coach.
The best joke. Yeah, I love how Sam, it's like everybody knows Coach is taking a couple to the head.
Yeah.
Because it's just everything Coach does that is wildly wrong is accepted and loved.
No one blinks. Right. Yep.
No one even blinks. You get to where you understand what's going on here. And then, so now that Sumner's left, he's gone with his, he's not come back anyway. Diana's getting to the understanding, okay, maybe he's not coming back. Maybe I just need to go home. This sucks. This is the worst day. Starts talking to Sam a little bit about why bartenders are always the one people dump their problems on, and then immediately begins dumping her problems onto Sam. Right? He's there. He's the only one in the bar. He's a captive audience. But he's also not the best consoler bartender. He's not that guy. That's not who you're looking for. So she ends up breaking down, and he's just like, I don't know, man. He's no good. This is where the feistiness between the two begin, and where my notes begin to fall apart because I was enjoying the show more than I was writing down what was happening.
I just wrote down the word goofy. That's all I got out of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so at one point, because she's like, no, it's all going to work out. And then he's like, he's in Barbados, like, they're in Barbados right now. Like, they're on their way to Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, I never switched the reservation. And she calls the airline, and they're like, and then you just hear her go, they did?
Yep.
No, all right, thanks. And she's like, how did you know? Bartender's intuition.
Yeah.
Everyone in that bar knew
everyone
but her.
Everyone in that bar knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everyone knows her name. Carla's line. When she gets in and she says, oh, I love a woman that's brave enough to take her luggage out drinking.
So great. We get kind of the breakdown of what's going on here. Sam ends up offering Diane a job because now he knows she's out of work. She's no longer a teaching assistant. She's going to need one. And it's she's like, I would never work here, blah, blah, blah. What's the point? But Carla has just given, I have no skills, nothing, not qualified at anything. Which is funny because you think she's this big intellectual, like, superstar.
Well, you learn that she's, like, it's almost like, what's his name from Arrested Development, right? That who's a perpetual student.
Oh, yeah.
Job?
Not Job.
Tobias?
Tobias, right.
Tobias.
Not Tobias.
No?
Not Tobias?
No.
It's been so long.
The other one. The other one.
Name all of them.
Anyway.
No idea.
It'll come to me later.
Jason Bateman's character? I don't remember what
his
name was.
I can't even think of the actor's name right now, even though I love him. I think his first name's Tony. That's as much as I've got. Anyway, he's just a perpetual student. That's all he can do.
Oh, Buster.
Buster. Buster.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
He's just a perpetual student. He has no skills whatsoever. He's just really good at doing school, which it's a little close to home for me, but we'll ignore all of that.
Right.
And so that's her, right? She's an academic, which doesn't necessarily... Now, the fact that there are 800,000 colleges in the city of Boston, we'll ignore that entirely.
Sure.
It's fine.
But we got to get to the best part, because just before they start their little argument...
Yes.
First of many, Carla gives Sam a big old drink order. He's like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then him and Diane get into it. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, there's no way I can do this. I'm not going to do this. And she goes to leave. And Sam's like, wait, what was I making?
Yeah, goes to ask Carla.
And Diane turns around and immediately gives him every single drink. Yeah. And he looks at her and she looks at him and is like, okay.
Yeah, you are good at something. Remembering drink orders, at least we know that much. And you would think that the show is kind of tapering off here. Like, we've done all our big bangers. We've done all the jokes that are going to make the audience laugh. We'll just coast into the ending. But we're not going to. Because two people walk into the bar on Diane's first day at work, and she starts... And you think, this is what you think the joke is, that Diane is just laying all her story... onto these two unsuspecting people, and you're already feeling like,
at
oh my gosh,
she
I
sits
can't believe
down
she's doing
at
right she sits
with
down
them.
With them and is just talking and talking, it's like,
yeah, just
all right.
Talking at them about what she's doing and how her life has gone and where she's at, and it's okay, what can I get for you? And they do not speak English. It pulls out an English little like a translation book, phrase book. Says, we've lost our luggage. Can you tell us where to find the police?
Where is police? We have lost
and
our luggage.
It just blew my mind. It was like the whole time the two actors who are playing that German couple are just sitting there like stoically watching her, and I'm like, this is weird. Like, I mean, this thing gives the actors anything to do, and then that happens. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, because you expect them to order something, or they're gonna say something,
like,
or order
leave.
Something weird.
Yeah,
they might
leave.
Like,
you know what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those are the easy jokes. We would have laughed at that, but we guffawed. They don't even speak English. And that
the best
was...
is that Coach, Carla, and Sam are all behind the bar. And they're
just
like,
watching it happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's this show is a masterpiece. I don't know of any pilot. Like, I mean, we've watched a lot of pilots. Well, we watched six. We'll probably watch more. But so far, I don't know of one that has hit all the beats of a show so well, that worked so well. That I can't imagine a studio watching this cut and being like, this show's not going to make it. Like, every one of them had to know that it was going to be the best thing, which makes me think that last place Nielsen had to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, right.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Clearly, they poured everything they had into this, and it was hilarious. If you have a brain, you're into this show. And it just didn't... I mean, for those who don't have a brain, if you didn't like it and you do have a brain, you know, whatever. But
you don't get to take it back. You own this now.
This Steven is back my back. Brand. It's fine. But to have that all out there and then come in dead last, that had to be really disappointing. Which makes me even happier that it ended up doing a full run of 270 episodes. I don't binge watch a lot. I know we've sat here and done a lot of these shows, and we've talked about, hey, would you go back and watch this? Most things, I would, but I don't. For one reason or another, it could be a time constraint. Just there's a lot out there. There's a lot of content in the world, everybody. But this show, I did manage to watch like 4.5 seasons of before I finally like had something else to do. so I mean, to me, that's yeah. I gotta go like make a bed or something. This show is an absolute treasure. I hope everybody who was out there got a chance to watch it. Any closing thoughts? I know we all love it, so we probably watch more. Okay. But is there anything we want to leave us with?
No, I just love this show.
Yeah, I really do. And I mean, what's great about it was a show that kept its momentum even with cast changes.
Yeah.
When Shelley Long left and they bring in Rebecca...
Kirstie Alley.
Like, the show kept going. It pivoted. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the exact same show. It was able to evolve.
Right.
Coach left and Woody came in and they were able to...
And I think the setting is part of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because a bar is a transient place anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, but there's still something to be said for the writing that you take one character in Diane... She leaves.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, Kirstie Alley comes in, a totally different character, and yet they still make it work. Like, that is so impressive.
Yeah.
Plus, it's such
the writers were actually...
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the writers were actually relieved when Shelley Long did leave, because it gave them more to work with, because they didn't feel like they had to shove Diane and Sam together anymore. They could break loose of that and do something else. Yeah, go ahead, Travis.
I was just going to say, it's also such a relatable show because even if you're not a drinker and you don't go to a bar, you may go out and have a place you go that is like Cheers. Everyone has their Cheers to an extent. And if you are one that goes out at all, so it could be a bar, it could be a restaurant, a cafe, a coffee shop, whatever it is. And so there's something comforting about that and relatable that anybody watching it can kind of feel a connection to as well.
Because, again, the genius of the show is they didn't focus on the drinking. They focused on this is a place where people come together. Mm-hmm. You know, it happened to be a bar, so you happen to have alcohol stuff. And they made those jokes when they could and needed to, but they didn't rely on it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They could have thrown softballs and still made people laugh, but they worked harder. They made it about the characters, not about the location. The location is just where they could shove these people together naturally, and they could joke and stuff. Shoot, I mean, I wish I had an environment like Cheers, where it's a place I went like every Thursday or whatever, and you walk in, people know you, and you're like, oh, yeah. But you gotta, you know, this is the 21st. Nobody talks to anybody anymore. You walk in a place, like, good luck.
It's funny. I think about that. We had a place like that in Atlanta that we would go, a pizza joint we'd go to every Friday night as a family. And, like, my dad was a truck driver that, you know, service vending machines and stuff. So, like, he knew the owners and everything so well that, you know, compared to other patrons, if we needed a refill, he would just take our cup and go in the back and do it. And then they're like, oh, there's Bob. See you, Bob. Whatever.
Oh, wow.
Kind of thing. Yeah. And it's like they still do that. They do it more like Sundays after church and go there. But, like, everybody knows them. And they're like, just like, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I had my Cheers bar. There was a bar here. A little local one called Brady's Bar, and my friends and I would go there every Monday night. They would have jazz band practice get done. I would get done playing basketball, and I'd meet up with them, and it got to a point where I would walk in, and it was always the same waitress. Unless she was on vacation, she was working, and I would walk in, and she would see me and just grab a mug and hand me a mug as I walked by. And I'd get to the table, and either they were already there, or if I was the first one there, a few minutes later, she would show up with a pitcher and be like, so how many are coming tonight, and how many orders of wings are you going to need?
Ooh,
like,
Lord.
It was because it was just regular as clockwork. We were there at like 9 p.m. every Monday night.
Mine was awesome. When I was working at Rockstar, every Monday for lunch, we would go to this Thai place nearby called Mango. And I would always get a Thai iced tea, no cream. And it was not long before I would walk in, sit down, and my Thai iced tea, no cream would just be put down in front of me. And
that's so cool.
It's just
There is a comforting feeling to that. I also had that at a Chinese takeout where I had been in there enough times. I walked in, and he was cooking. The owner was back there cooking. And he just looks over. He sees me and nods. And I just sit down, and 10 minutes later, my food's ready. He's like, here you go.
That's amazing.
In college,
I mean,
There was a Chinese food place we'd go to after church on Sundays, and we went so often that our group would walk in, and the waitress would look. It's like, okay, sweet tea, Coke, sweet tea, water. It's like, yep, we're all getting the buffet.
Yep.
We had a place we would go downtown called Salem Street Pub, and they had a trivia night on Wednesdays, and we got together, three of my friends. The group's kind of changed, but we would go in, and we had a waitress there who was probably there for a year. We'd go about once or twice a month to trivia just to sit down, do some trivia, and she knew all our orders after a little while. So it wasn't like we knew everybody. We did get to know team names because we were the Irish Wristwatch. I can't remember who made up that. I think it was one of my buddies trying to do a tongue twister because the guy couldn't say it, which is amazing. Nice. But yeah, we would end up being in third, first, second place against these other two teams that were always there on Wednesdays. Like, who are those people? Who are you? And why do you keep beating us? It's like, it was one, we had one of those, fun rivalries.
And that was the thing about
the
game store. Especially like the Magic players who would come to hang out. Like, I was the Sam there. I knew everybody's name. I knew what they played. You know, the board game guys, what they like. Hey, there's a new thing coming out. Like, I always said that of all the retail that I've done, working at the GameStar was way more like being a bartender. Like, you know the regulars. You know what their usual was. It was a whole thing.
You had to know what games they might like in case they asked. Oh, yeah. That's super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that was Cheers. If you've got some memories of Cheers, you can let us know about them. Even send us like what your crew was like. Tell us a little story.
Yeah.
You can send those emails over to thosewerethedaysshow@gmail.com. We didn't get any emails this week about Cheers or about Wings, but we'd love to read some, so send them our way. Yeah. Did we get any Twitter, X, whatever, feedback, socials feedback?
Not seeing any.
No.
Nothing this time. Nothing this time. Hey, we got some live stuff from Skeezix. My uncle has a diner like this. Feels so special when I visit and we go for breakfast. Waitress knows to bring a pot of coffee, knows to tell them when they have SOS. I don't know what SOS is, but good. Glad to hear it. Diners are great. There should
diners
be more of those. I used to take my son to one after church on Sunday, and he would always get the burger. And they brought it out in a little cardboard Cadillac.
Oh, SOS.
Oh, cream chip beef. Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. I got you. Yep.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah, but it's good stuff. So, yeah, thosewerethedaysshow@gmail.com. Thosedaysshow on the Twitters, if you call it that now. But next week, we're going to be going somewhere else, and Amy is going to take us there. Where are we going, Amy?
All right, I'm going to tell you right now, it's kind of a doozy. It's a two-parter. It's a little big. I can't believe it's taken this long to get to what was most likely the most formative television of my youth. We're going to watch the pilot of Star Trek The Next Generation, otherwise known as Encounter at Farpoint. Now, all right, so it is like a total of 90-minute runtime. Be prepared. And the nice thing is that Paramount has put them together into like just a thing, which is kind of nice. Encounter at Farpoint. I'm very excited because it's been a hot second since I watched this. It's also real good because whenever we eventually roll around to finales, it's a good one to do because call back right back to day one.
Yes, they
which
do.
Is outstanding. What? So, yeah. Available on Paramount Plus.
Where that is exciting.
Star Trek live.
True story. I have never seen an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
I know.
I
think that didn't like weigh into my choice. Like a little bit. I was like, well, I mean, I know the other two are already going to be into it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love being the outlier.
Before we do, Steven watches Star Trek, our new show, in which we all just watch Steven watch Star Trek.
Watch me watching it.
And then we go, see?
Isn't that great? Yes, that's really good. I'm so excited. So that's, you heard, Star Trek The Next Generation is the pilot for next week. 90 minutes. Carve off some time. Grab some popcorn.
I know it's a lot. But it'll it's not Greatest American Hero, so.
Yes, look, don't be too hard on Greatest American Hero.
Greatest American Hero was
great.
Great
stuff.
It was
great
the best
stuff.
30-year-olds playing 16-year-olds on a TV
Believe
pilot.
It or not, That really was some of the best high school
age. It was really good.
Oh, great. Oh, man, there's a lot of back episodes of this show you guys should go enjoy. I'm just telling you, if you listen to the show. Also, some art you should look at. Like, if you aren't paying attention to Audie's unbelievable album art, like, in particular, this week's, I mean, every week is amazing.
But this week's is so good.
I literally wanted to frame it and put it on my wall. It is unbelievable, Audie.
Yeah, we should do a postcard it's so set. Great.
Ooh,
yeah,
we should.
Something. I mean, the art's too good to just leave it on the internet, Audie. I'm just saying. Just saying.
Got it all on my
Send Audie some tips.
Tell me what to do with it.
Okay, I'll just put it out there. Let's go. That's patron level stuff, Audie. Right? We'll start the Patreon, and that's part of what you get are the postcards.
The postcards.
How bad I am. We're bad at organizing notes, much less a Patreon. Are you kidding? We got this. It's fine. Fine. Amy's got skills, but you know, she's busy with other stuff. Ake Willow doing it, knocking
it out.
We
don't
talk
about the Ake Willow Patreon. If you're a member of our Ake Willow Patreon, we're very sorry.
Don't worry, we have a Patreon
for
my stuff. My mom's a member, it's great. Thank you, Mom. Yeah. So everybody, you have yourselves a wonderful time. Until next time, we will you enjoy your drinks responsibly. At whatever local dive you like to hang out at, and come back next time as we talk about Star Trek Next Generation on Those Were the Days. Bye, everybody.